Small world, big data.
Object store and ransomware, it seems to be a very good connection there. And is object storage going to fit into that ransomware protection area?
The short answer to your question, Warren, is yes. It's a very hot topic right now.
Hi, Mike Matchett with Small World Big Data. And we are here with the IT Weekly newsletter chief editor, Warren Avery, and a special guest today. We've got Sunny Halderman to talk with us about object storage. Sunny is an object storage expert in content object storage specifically, working there for about 6-7 years, and also has another deeper background in data infrastructure storage and some other networking products. Welcome, Sunny.
Thank you.
And of course, welcome, Warren.
As always, Mike, it's nice to talk to you. And the reason we put this together, Mike, is that we were talking about object storage a few weeks back, and it became obvious to me that I'm not a strong object storage guy. I'm a file guy. You've got a background in it. So through a mutual friend, Jim Adams, who he said, if there's anybody in the world to talk to about object storage, Sunny is the guy. So I'll sort of kick it off. And my question to you, Sunny, is what is object storage? Why is that important to us these days?
So good question, Warren. Ironically enough, the technology, many people aren't aware of this, but object storage in itself has been around since the early 2000s. Dating back to about 2003 was the first system I've seen where object storage came out. In the beginning, it was predominantly used for archiving type use cases. And as you speed the technology forward, kind of to where we're at today, it kind of went from that core archiving technology out to the edge, to the end users, now to cloud, and we're really starting to see a real strong push in IoT. Reason why it's important and the power behind object storage is a couple things. One, with the IoT world coming on and all the sensor data and stuff in the world, where a lot of organizations and companies are seeing the legacy traditional NFS and SMB type protocols being exhausted of resources due to just the sheer growth of data. And then you couple that scalability that object storage gives you, it alleviates the bottlenecks that your companies are seeing on traditional NAS storage. And you couple that with the ability to bring intelligence to your data by tagging data with custom metadata as well as metadata that's native to the objects. You really start to bring intelligence to the data that you're storing and to be able to do it at scale.
How do you find something if you don't have a record and a file pointer? I mean, how do you find something out there?
Most of your object storage vendors have, you know, search mechanisms built into the products. So every file or object that gets ingested into the system has custom or system metadata with it, which is typically like, you know, who owns it, what application it got written by. But then you can also tag your data with custom metadata. And by custom metadata, for example, just take a use case like healthcare. You could put a patient's ID as a custom metadata field. And then the technology has built-in indexing that basically indexes all of that custom metadata. So then it's as simple as like typing in the patient's number into basically like a Google search engine, and it will go and retrieve the records that match that criteria.
All right. Now, I know this answer, so it's a bit of a leading question, but maybe you could describe a little bit of the difference between files and objects, because an object can be a file. But if someone's interfacing with that object system and they're not a storage person, if they're more of a business user, how should they be thinking about object storage versus file storage?
So file storage, you typically, you know, you have a directory structure. Users are very used to browsing that directory structure and picking on a particular folder. And that's really how you interact with files for the most part, especially in the Windows world, right? In an object storage world, though, you typically aren't browsing the object store itself. You're typically interfacing with some type of interface that you're going to basically search for it, because it's basically like a storage cabinet or the internet for that matter, where it's just got a bunch of stuff, objects stuffed inside of it. And you're not browsing to find anything. You're really searching. You're using analytics to retrieve the data.
And objects become these monolithic store, get, put kinds of things in the system, whereas a file you might edit bits and bytes of, and there's a whole different protocol, as you said, to get access to objects versus files, and objects are much more developer friendly, we know. You mentioned metadata though, so now I'm going to ask a question I don't necessarily know the answer to. Is it common to store the metadata with objects in the storage itself, or to store the metadata in a separate repository, separate from the objects? What experience is going on there?
So that's a good question. That typically, it varies a little bit by vendor. Typically, you know, if we're depending on how you have the object store laid out. So they're not all equal, if you will. For example, you know, you can have internal storage on your actual access nodes, if you will. And then you can have S3 storage attached to it to where you're storing the bulk of the object. And in that particular case, almost every object vendor is always going to hold on to the metadata because the metadata is really the keys to the kingdom, if you will. And so the metadata is normally stored locally. If you're tiering externally to a third party or you're tiering to the public cloud, typically we always hold on to the metadata locally. And then the blob, if you will, or the payload of the data gets encrypted and tiered off to that S3 bucket or whatever other tier you may have behind your object storage.
So object storage used in tiering on there. Back to you, Warren. What, you got another question, I know.
My question is that, do you see object storage working out in terms of the ransomware that we're seeing today? I mean, is that going to help people get back? You know, object store and ransomware, it seems to be a very good connection there. And everybody just got to get that call at midnight saying, uh-oh, we got a problem. So is object storage going to fit into that ransomware protection area?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And it's a very hot topic right now. The short answer to your question, Warren, is yes. By nature, object storage is worm. So that's write once and read many. Mm. So once the object is written to an object store, it's basically when it's ingested, we basically create a digital thumbprint, if you will, basically an MD5 hash of the object. We store that in a database. And over time, we have internal services that will go out in the object storage and it will make sure that the object is still the same as it was when it was ingested. So to make sure it didn't get any bit rot or anything of that nature. And if it does, it has the ability to auto repair the objects. So when you look at it from a ransomware perspective, anything that we're ingesting into the object store, it is protected and it cannot be edited or changed. And if something tries to change it, it's going to basically get an error back from the object storage platform saying that it cannot be edited or versioned. In some object stores, you do have the ability to enable versioning. And in that case, you know, if ransomware were to come at the object storage, it's going to create a version. So it would be simply as restoring, going back to the previous version prior to the ransomware attack. I would add on here the other extremely popular use case that we're really starting to see evolve around this ransomware is in conjunction with backup. Backup to object is becoming a very popular use case, you know, tied together with this ransomware so that we can basically back up media servers, for example, into an object store. That way, if the ransomware takes over their media server, they have a gold copy to go back to, for example. So those two are coupling together very nicely and they're very hot topics.
So immutability, we used to think of as worm as saying writing to an optical platter that could not be rewritten. Here, we're still writing to our normal media or our backend storage, but the object storage system just simply isn't architected to allow you to edit objects. You have to basically delete an object and write a new object. You can't do that. Or you can set the software management layer to even prevent you from deleting them. So some sort of
correct
policies, right? Okay. Right. So it is sort of this enforcement on there. Just as a question on, you said mentioned backups, a couple of things. I think related to this, are objects stored encrypted or erasure coded or fragmented? When you actually write an object out to the backend media, is there anything weird going on there?
Yeah, so erasure coding is very popular in the object world. We can kind of talk about that. So yeah, you have the ability to control encryption. Again, different object vendors out there have different ways of doing it. Some of them will let you do encryption or data at rest encryption by the bucket. Some of them are more system-wide. So it's either you have everything encrypted or you don't have anything encrypted. And then, of course, everything's encrypted over the wire using TLS. So the objects are definitely encrypted in many of the use cases. And then, you know, if you're using third-party like S3-based storage, which is more network-attached-based storage versus fiber array storage, there's the ability to do erasure coding in there. You can do a local erasure coding local to the system, but there's also the ability to do geo erasure coding. And what that does is you basically pick three or more sites and the system will chunk up the objects, if you will, and it'll store a piece of the object amongst all of the sites participating in the geo topology. And really where that use case comes into play is if you have very large amounts of data and you want to protect yourself against site failure, And that's where the geo erasure coding comes into play. But yeah, typically everything is encrypted at rest and, you know, integrated with key management systems to rotate those keys in and out of the platform.
Quick question, is object storage making data management simpler or less expensive?
So yeah, so that's another power behind object storage and lifecycle management of the data that's in the platform and being able to move the data around. As you can imagine, you take something of object storage where you want it to have the scalability to support tens of billions of files and at petabyte, even at exabyte scale, having to move that data around is very hard without building some intelligence around it. So it's very common in the object world, and it continues to grow, is to build intelligence into the platform that allows you to basically control that life cycle of the data and be able to place it where you need it based on access time or whatever other feature you may need to move the data by. So absolutely.
Because the object storage has a lot of metadata that enables a deeper kind of management than, say, a file system. So a file system might have what you might think of metadata, but it's very structured in terms of access control and who owns it and the creation time and date, but that's about it, right? So in objects, you can have arbitrary metadata you associate with objects in most systems, and that allows you to make all sorts of data management policies or enrich them and do some very cool things with that.
Right.
Go ahead, Warren. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, I'm just thinking, is there a best storage mechanism for object data? Is it solid state? Is it hard drives? Is it tape? Is it cloud?
I've seen object stores on tape. We've seen them in the cloud, Warren. We've seen them everywhere. Yeah, it's a good question. What is the sweet spot for object store?
That's another good question. Again, you go back to the early 2000s when it was the archive base. The misconception that is out in the marketplace today is object storage is slow. Because when it was used as an archive tier, you can imagine it was really large SATA disk that were backing the platform and they weren't very performant. You scale the object storage forward now to where we're at and we're starting to take on these IoT type use cases. And it's very common to find an SSD object store running, you know, all flash at some level of the platform. And then as the data ages, we evict the data or tier the data down to more economical storage nodes. I would say kind of the sweet spot for object storage is, you know, really organizations have to go all into the cloud, or they've got to figure out, you know, do we need to do a hybrid? Can we live on-prem? So it kind of just depends on the customer and the direction they want to go. I would say what's becoming a little bit more popular now is a hybrid deployment model, so that where you can build your internal cloud and you can put some data up to the public cloud, but you don't have to put it all up there. And so you can build this hybrid model to where on-prem you're building your object storage and you're federating other S3-based storage vendors out there or the public cloud for that nature. And then through that federation layer, you have the ability to control data placement, whether it be on-prem or in the public cloud.
So data keeps moving. We briefly touched a little bit on size, but let's hit that one directly. Is there a limit to the size of objects being stored? Is there a limit to the size of the object store? And are we really talking big data here? Is object storage the right storage for big data?
Yes, so good question. I wouldn't say object storage, if you speak of big data in, you know, the traditional like Hadoop type space, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a replacement for that. But in terms of storing, you know, I'm using, I guess, a different term, but you storing a large amount of data and being able to bring intelligence to that data, that's really the key point behind object storage, in my opinion. In terms of limits of storing files, typically the marketplace is kind of, everybody's kind of setting their standard on S3. Obviously, Amazon is the big elephant in the room, if you will. And so everybody's really starting to standardize around the S3 API in terms of interacting with object storage. And I believe the limit on S3 today in terms of file size is 5 terabytes in size.
Wow, and a single object.
Single object, 5 terabytes in size, leveraging multi-part upload. So you're not writing a 5 terabyte object to the object storage at one time. It's multi-threaded. You're breaking it up into smaller pieces, writing it all in parallel to the object store. And then once it gets to the object store, the object store reassembles the 5 terabyte object and stores it as a 5 terabyte object.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned standards, Amazon S3, of course, being their simple storage service, being the canonical object store out there that most people are aware of, is not itself, though, a standard. What do you see in terms of standards coming out? Is there an object storage standard that might come out of the rest of the marketplace? And in particular, I think metadata is kind of unstandardized. Do you see any standardization happening on the metadata side of things?
I haven't seen any official standards out there around metadata or around object storage in general. Many vendors chose to write their own RESTful API. And the reason why they did that was because it allowed them the ability to add features and functionality into the object storage that, say, S3 didn't have. But as time has evolved, so has the S3 API. I'll give you a perfect example. Compliance early on, S3 just didn't have a whole lot of compliance functionality in the API. So many vendors said, well, we want to target the compliance use cases out there. So how do we do that? Well, we write our own REST API that allows us to build in all of those API calls to support that. And that was very powerful for, you know, the first 10 or so years. But now that, you know, Amazon's gotten so large, they've created private clouds for healthcare, they've created cloud for government, their API has evolved a lot. And so now it's just typically any applications, if we want to have ISV integrations into our object storage, I would probably say almost all of them, if not all of them, are standardizing on that S3 API. So that's kind of what's really powering that.
I mean, everyone uses it. And to be honest with our listening audience, this podcast is hosted, its files on Amazon S3 in the background. So if you're downloading it, you're actually downloading it off of object storage. You're using it even to listen to us today. Got another question or two? Warren, first, do you have anything, last questions?
Not for me. I pretty much got a much better handle. Sonny gave an example. When I go to Google and I put in knee replacement, I don't care where that is. It's just going to bring it back, all these objects for me. And again, as soon as Sony said, that Google search, that's what I'm doing. I'm going out there and searching for objects. And that to me was just a light went on and made that whole thing really understandable. I don't care where it's stored. I just need to get knee replacement and back it comes.
Yeah, no soccer for you, Warren. Nope. Okay, so Sonny, I know you've written a lot of articles on this. You're a published author on object storage, and Warren, you've selected and curated several of his articles into the IT Weekly newsletter over time. So this is kind of a nice little chat we're having to bring the community together. One of my last questions for you, is something coming in object storage that we should be aware of? What's on the horizon here? Those of us who might look forward a little bit, what can we expect to see in 2021 in terms of what's happening in object storage?
I think what you're going to start seeing pretty common in the object storage world is you're going to see a lot of organizations, if they haven't already, start transitioning to more of a microservice architecture rather than the traditional monolithic type architecture where it's basically a black box. And if you need to scale it, you add more black boxes. What's starting to come now is that microservice technology where they're integrated with Kubernetes and things of that nature to where, depending on what you're doing, you're going to scale a certain piece of the object store, being able to burst to the cloud and things of that nature. I think you're going to start seeing a lot more of that. And then in terms of scale, you know, we're starting to see applications and use cases to where you need to start pushing 20 to 30 gigabits per second in and out of the object storage. So I think you're going to see scale performance start hitting new peaks.
Any last words?
No, I don't. I think we've covered a number of topics. Again, I appreciate the opportunity and the invite. It's a pleasure speaking with you guys.
All right. If you are listening today, this is on the IT Weekly Newsletter Tech Top 6 podcast. You can find that podcast at smallworldbigdata.com under podcasts. Be sure and subscribe so you can listen to us every week and hear these extra interviews as well. If you like what you're hearing, give us a good rating so other people can find it too. And if you want to contact us, there's a nice little form at smallworldbigdata.com where you can put in your comments or questions for people like Sonny, and we will get to them as fast as we can. With that, thank you very much for being here today, Sonny.
Thank you.
And thanks, Warren, as always.
My pleasure, as always, Mike. You take care of yourself. Sonny, thank you so much. We'll get together soon.
Okay, sir. Good morning.
All right. Take care.
This has been a Small World Big Data Podcast.